I got something in my eye.
I look over and sand just starts pouring out.
Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I am your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie. And I kind of do know some stuff about Doctor Who now.
Yeah, you're as far as I was when I started watching Doctor Who at this point.
I found myself this last time, or the most recent time that I went to Renaissance Fair. Let me restart that one sec. So the last time I went to a Renaissance fair, I found that most of the conversations I was having with people had everything to do with Doctor Who. Part of that was also because of what I was wearing, which was and wasn't the Fourth Doctor's outfit.
Yeah, it was a Fourth Doctor slant that you were doing.
I tried to merge the Fourth Doctor with a Hobbit, and people didn't get it. But those who got it really liked it, but it's the most I've ever talked about Doctor Who outside of the podcast. And I went, uh-oh.
And you could like keep up with the conversation too, which is another thing.
Yes. Cause they said, who's your favorite doctor? And I'd be like, well, I'm a little biased. I mean, based off of what I'm wearing, I would say I like more of the classic doctors. And
I've turned you into a dork.
So I can't, I don't think I can say anymore that I don't know a lot about Doctor Who, because I clearly do. Mm-hmm. So what
are you now then, Cassie?
I don't know. I'll have to sit on it for a little bit. Just hum, num, num. Just eat.
And she's a sentient wheel of cheese.
Whoa! That's me rolling downhill.
Well, maybe we can think about that a little bit as we watch today's episodes. This is another two-parter we're getting into. This is Series 5, Episode 4 and 5, The Time of Angels and Flesh and Stone.
No!
Yes, this is our Return of the Weeping Angels.
We went to Dark Harbor this past weekend, and in one of the mazes, you're in a church, and in the church they had angel statues, and I turn around and I go, Zach! And then one of our buddies heard me panicking about the angel statues, and he went, don't look away. Do not blink. And I went,
Yes, today we're sort of getting the return of Stephen Moffat's greatest hits, because we get the Weeping Angels, and this is also the return of River Song.
Spoiler alert, thanks.
It's one of the first things in the episode. It's not really a big spoiler.
Yeah, but I know you enjoy seeing me surprised.
It's also part of the Prophecy today. Before I get into the Prophecy, what sort of things might you be expecting from the Return of the Weeping Angels?
Well, I think that the Weeping Angels are gonna come back.
You're gonna go get some people?
Well, they're gonna turn some people into time travelers unexpectedly by making them go way, way back.
All right. So
wait, is that what happened with Phil of the Future? Did they interact with the
Weeping Angels? Got a hold of the whole car they were in.
Yeah.
That's a show I haven't thought about in years. Oh my God.
Back in the day, and now it's Phil of the Future.
God, that is a show I have not thought about in years. But I will tell you this little fun fact. This is the first episodes that were filmed of the season. So this is the first real performances Matt and Karen got to do as the Doctor and Amy.
So just for clarification's sake, this was the first story they recorded. So the
last
hospital, the eel.
Yeah, the hospital, the eel, the
space whale.
The space whale and the Daleks with Churchill were filmed after this episode was filmed.
Okay, interesting.
So this is the first time these two characters are acting out these roles.
These two actors are acting out these characters.
Yeah.
Copy.
That doesn't usually happen. Usually doctors film their, not necessarily their, all their stories in order, but they're usually their first story is the first one they film, partly because the first story is usually the doctor figuring themselves out. So it's a nice excuse to let the actor also figure themselves out.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, they didn't go with that. They went with this story instead. I don't know if it was a production reason or what exactly the reasoning was, but I just know that this was the first one that they filmed. And so could be a fun thing to keep an eye out for. So with that, let's get into the Cassie for Fassie a little bit today.
Yay.
As I told you, this episode features the return of River Song. There were two stories that River Song had mentioned in her diary in Sounds in the Library. She had mentioned a picnic at Asgard or the crash of the Byzantium. Which of those two stories do you think we're going to watch today?
Picnic.
You wanted to see the picnic at Asgard?
I think so. Since angels, weeping angels, statues, gardens, we're going to go into the
whole. Chris Hemsworth shows up with his hammer to fight the angels.
So that's where Asgard is. Yeah, like that just feels more accurate.
Okay.
Or at the very least, I feel like there is more of an argument to be made with Picnic in Asgard in terms of the weeping angels themselves. Just because if we are looking at Asgard, which if it is like Norse Asgard, right? Or is that a planet just called Asgard for no apparent reason?
I mean, they don't really say in that story. They just call it a picnic at Asgard. It's just like Asgard, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. We'll do that.
All right. So today we're going to see the previously alluded to story, the picnic at Asgard. Last time you had theorized that the angels could set up shop in a park because that's a place with a lot of statues.
Yeah. I just said it again.
I wrote it in the question, so I'm reading off my own yeah, notes. Yeah,
but I also just said it again.
Well, then, where do you think the angels have set up shop this time? Do you still think it's a park, or should I give you some different choices?
No choices. Okay. Why not?
All right. So some choices I have here are they are in a museum.
Okay.
They are in a tomb.
Hmm.
Or they are at an artist's residence.
An artist's residence?
Yeah, like a sculptor has some Weeping Angel sculptures in his collection.
Just because I think that one is more interesting, we'll do that.
Okay. All right. So Cassie's Profassies for today are that today we're going to watch a picnic at Asgard featuring the home of an artist that has been plagued by weeping angels. We will find out together as we watch The Time of the Angels.
Because here's my thinking. Very similar to how the doctor in
the
other doctor. I'm forgetting his name. In Victory of the Daleks, that guy.
Bracewell, Dr. Bracewell.
Thank you. Very similar to how Dr. Bracewell was bamboozled by the Daleks, you know, unbeknownst to him being Dalek design. Mm-hmm. Just, oh, this was an idea he had, a figure of his own invention. I could see the angels also being like, yeah, we were an idea too.
The angels have, this is like almost like the origin of the angels in a way where they kind of made themselves.
Not made themselves, but just like when you see something enough times in a dream.
Okay.
That where you're like, ah, yes, this is something I've dreamt up, even though it's like dreams are comprised of things that you've seen sometimes your entire life. But it's just not prevalent enough information for you to keep up at the forefront of your memory. You keep that all in back storage.
Gotcha.
I'm a psychologist. Those are real terms. But when you dream, that's your brain going through all of this stuff. And so it would not surprise me in some sneaky, twixty sort of way that this is also something that somebody was like, ah, yes, I've had a vision. A vision my entire life. And it's like, oh, no, that's fully just one day they weren't there and the next day they were.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they're here. They've arrived. My own creation.
Well, let's find out if that is correct as we watch The Time of Angels and Flesh and Stone.
If it's not, you can just erase all of that. Don't out me.
Today's episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by Rockabye Boulders. Hey, are you struggling with your sleep? The horrors of reality keeping you tossing and turning every night, unable to get the deep, grounding sleep that you crave? Maybe all you need is a little extra weight. Introducing Rockabye Boulders, the revolutionary sleep system inspired by nature itself. This isn't just any old weighted blanket. This is hand-picked sediment straight from the source and brought to your door. Imagine it. The soothing, comforting heft of Earth's own crust, bringing you a new level of calm and tranquility. Each Rockabye boulder is carefully calibrated to your sleep preferences, whether that be under a little pebble or a full sheet of bedrock. Rockabye boulders. Just because you don't live under a rock doesn't mean you shouldn't sleep under one. And we are back from The Time of Angels.
Mike Skinner.
What?
That's the name of the security guard. Oh, okay. Is Mike Skinner.
I was just like, is that a reference to something? But yeah, we've got the credits paused, and that's the name of the actor playing the security guard. So, how you feeling about the return of the Weeping Angels, Cassie?
You know, I really like them a lot.
You like that whatever has the image of an angel becomes an angel?
No, because then I had a horrible idea of like, if you have like a weeping angel tattoo.
Or you make a weeping angel drawing, or if you take a picture of a weeping angel, or like, isn't this when they had a video?
And this is a whole episode about them. The angels are real.
This is a whole two-parter about them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, we'll go over more of the...
The thing about this, too, and I know that we'll touch up on it more, but it's the sheer quantity of weeping angels in this one. Because mm-hmm. It's not just the one that's, like, an angel. She's beauty. She's grace.
Last one had four.
There are the, because they're just, they are angels. Mm-hmm. They're angelic, which means that whatever movements they make are very swift and smooth and precise. Mm-hmm. But because this one is full of a catacomb of statues, anytime you pan over to them, they're shambling like mid shamble towards you. And it's scary.
Yeah, because these angels are they've been down for centuries and are starving and dying and they're losing their form. So they don't get like the like soft face of an angel. You get this lumpy, malformed rock statue just like lurching its way towards you.
It's scary. It's scary. There are voices from beyond as well.
Yeah, apparently the weeping angels have the ability to snap your neck and then reanimate your brain so you can talk, so they can use your voice against your friends.
Come and see. I think that's the one thing, and you had mentioned it early on when we started, that people were starting to get tired of the Moffatisms. Uh-huh. And I was like, I don't really know what that means, but I'm slowly learning what that means, because it appears that Stephen Moffat really likes to use like very simple phrases, but see, how can I make them menacing?
Yeah.
Hey, who turned out the lights? Come and see.
Yeah.
Come look what we found. Come and see.
I mean, there's a part of it also where like the weeping angels were a very simple concept, and then to make them scarier, he has like started compounding things onto them. Where it's not just like, oh, the weeping angels are these statues that live forever. They're now like whatever has the image of an angel becomes an angel. They also they can appear inside videotape, and they apparently you can't look them directly in the eye. They can snap your neck and reanimate your brain. Like there's so much about them where it's like you've made these creatures so much more complicated than they were. It all works in favor of this story, but I do worry that if they were to keep trying to bring angels back, eventually they're going to buckle under their own weight of like all the things they can do.
I died afraid.
Yeah.
You told me if I was afraid, I would live. I died in pain and fear.
I trusted you, and now I'm dead.
How does that make you feel?
Like, just trying to piss him off.
Which, like, there is a part of me that goes, yeah, a creature that has lived for eons, I would expect that they would have an understanding of language. Mm-hmm. There is also a part of me that would like to see the angels not quite getting language.
You realize what they're doing, though. They're playing with their food.
Hey, who turned out the lights?
Yeah, they're just bopping they're bopping the meatball around the plate, trying to piss the meatball off.
Hey, come look what we found.
Yeah.
Come and see.
They did have some, they also had this bit of Karen Gillan looked into the eyes of the angel, and now she believed that something was happening to her.
Well, because she kept on scratching her eye and sand was pouring out, which...
Did you like that effect where she, like, pushed into her eye and a whole, like...
No, because not the, like, obviously that, like, didn't happen to me. But there have been several times where, like, especially when I was a kid, I would go to the beach and then sand would just be in my swimsuit. So then I would, like, sit down and stand back up and there was just a flood of sand coming out of my tuchus.
Yeah, they apparently put an eye patch on her so that when she pressed into it, the sand would pour out of it.
And then her saying, I can't move. My hand is stone. I've had similar thoughts while I've been high. There have been moments where I'm like, I'm so sorry. I can't move. My feet are glued.
Yeah.
I don't know where the glue came from.
Funny little thing. In that moment, Matt Smith actually bit her to get a real reaction out of her. I really
space teeth.
Yeah, you bit me. You left a mark. Do you have space teeth? I want to know what space teeth means. Mm-hmm. The doctor just smiles at his teeth.
He has space teeth. He smiles, and it's just the Milky Way.
We'll go over more of the specifics of the plot in the second part here. But I am curious about how you're liking River Song coming back.
I really like River Song. I think right now she might be I would say that I think that River Song might be one of my favorite companion and but not.
Yeah.
Like in recurring the same characters. Way. Yeah. In the same way that the Face of Beau Face of Beau is still my favorite. What am I talking about? Yeah,
you do like Captain Jack Harkness. She's still mad about that after all this time.
What is that laugh? Stop. Ew. If they could, do you think weeping angels would make those kinds of sounds too? They're skittering about.
I think we've discovered they sound like this, very monotone.
I will say that the voice of Sacred Bob is like... He's very sweet sounding.
Yeah. And they keep him very, like, very emotionless, which is very interesting. Because part of what I think makes the Weeping Angels work is that they are the sort of, like, almost Lovecraftian in a way. Where just, like, the thing that they need is just to eat. But the thing that they eat is us. Like, we're just so much, they're so much bigger than us cosmically that.
Well, because it's not even what they eat is us. They don't need protein or blood. They need energy.
Yeah.
And they need simple life force. And that's the part that's scary. Because it's not like a lion. Like a lion needs to eat, and if it had the opportunity, it would eat you. You are just a like shambling gazelle.
Mm-hmm.
Like absolutely. You turn your back, you're gonna get. This isn't like that though. You still gonna get. But it needs your, like, electricity. And that's the part that's fucking with me a little bit too much.
Yeah. Yeah, it needs the potential energy of your time stream.
Oh, my God.
So there's a part of it where when it uses a human voice, it just doesn't sound quite right. You know what I mean?
I mean, it sounds it's manipulative.
Yeah, it's just very, it's very, very flat, very, very like customer service voice.
Your pole will not last much longer, and the angels will be with you shortly. Sorry, sir.
Bob is using his customer service voice when he's the angel.
Sorry, sir. I wish there was more I could do for you.
Yeah, I think that River Song gets a really like strong intro here.
I do like that she pulls a... you remember that one character from Monsters University, Art?
It's been a while since I've watched that movie.
He's the purple, like, you, basically. And there's the moment where he just goes, I can't go back to jail! And he runs away. It's like, there is... I know... I probably won't ever learn why Art, a college student, has already been to jail and why he can't go back. Yeah, very similar. River Song has her own, like, can't go back to jail.
Yeah, that she even literally says, I'm not going back to prison.
What did you do?
Yeah, so there's a lot of River lore that gets dropped. Like, and there's another moment that they reference Dead Meadows. They reference that she's has been to prison, and they keep bringing up the question of whether or not she's the doctor's wife.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's complicated.
Yeah.
I would like to contest something.
Okay.
They said that the Weeping Angel was part of a private collection.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't I still get a point for artist residence?
Tell you what, I will take the smallest chunk of a point I've ever taken before and put it in the point jar.
Thank you.
So,
add it to my tinfoil ball of points.
Yeah, the breadcrumbs off of that point I will take and put in the point jar.
This is a Kisses wrapper amount of points. Thank you for adding it to my foil ball.
It will be one more jelly bean yet to count. Were you picking up on any of them, like, not really being these characters yet? Because this was their first performances as the Doctor and Amy.
So I think there is something at play here that's making it okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because many times Amy makes the reference that the Doctor is, quote, Mr. Grumpy.
Mr. Grumpy Face.
Yeah, Mr. Grumpy Face. I am a Mr. Grumpy Face today. And so there is a part of me that's like, all right, cool. The stakes are extremely high for the Doctor. Very, very much in the same way that, like, the stakes were always very high for Eccleston, mm-hmm, and for Tennant. So assuming that Matt Smith did his homework,
mm-hmm,
if this is his first episode and he knows that the stakes are high in this, then just doing a little bit of a, like, copycat of what do these men's interpretations of the Doctor look like when the stakes are high? Mm-hmm. Particularly, what is David Tennant's relationship with the Doctor? Because many times you would hear them say, don't blink. And it was like, you're not only saying don't blink, you're saying it in the same way, which, mm-hmm, I would do the same thing. That's the thing that makes the most sense. If you're starting basic, you're having to hit the ground running, just hearkening back to how your character dealt with this issue in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a little bit at play there with Matt Smith's interpretation of the Doctor in this moment. Mm-hmm. He's still being a little smarmy and a little, like, tongue-in-cheek about, like, when the general or the high priest,
yeah, the bishop
is talking about how they're going into the catacombs, the halls of the dead, and he goes, nope, you can keep going.
Yeah, that's that. Just briefly touching on that for a moment. How do you, as someone who grew up Catholic, feel about them basically saying that the church has become the army now?
I mean, I've always held on to the belief that the Catholic Church right now, as it stands, is a business.
You're not wrong.
And so that's why when people ask me personally, if we want to just graze the top of this is not going to be a discussion on religion. But I consider myself a deeply religious person in the, like, you know, it's a mishmash of,
mm-hmm,
obviously, if so many other world religions have a belief in a creator and prophets and saints and you know, spin off gods and goddesses and there has to be some kind of truth to that. The specificity, though, is when it gets a little fuzzy in terms of years, you know, decades, centuries. Mm-hmm. A church were to then flip and become an army.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about it,
that makes perfect sense.
When you think about it, what were the Crusades?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, when you also consider the fact that if my belief of like, yeah, the church is a business. Mm-hmm. By all means.
It just gets into the military industrial complex.
Yeah. If you're convoluting church and state as well. Mm-hmm. Like church and military, like there is a very clear through line where it's like that makes perfect sense.
And there's also a way where like if the human race is regularly like traveling between planets, the church would have to evolve in some way.
Would have to evolve, and it's also, I'm not gonna speak too much about the military being a cult, but.
There's something very...
a part of if you subscribe to a, or if you participate in a very specific lifestyle, mm-hmm. and you subscribe to a very specific belief,
yeah.
and that becomes the thing that you fight for, the thing that you stand for, mm-hmm. then by all means, like, yes, if that then was a blend of the two, or if that then if there was a church of, you know, to a certain degree, you're just kind of being a church of Aries.
Yeah. To put it another way, being in the military is a very like rigid and structured life.
Much in the same way that like if you're a nun, that is also very rigid
exactly. Yeah. That's exactly like rigid being and deeply structured religious life. Is also a very.
Yeah. It's just, you know, one is fighting the fight and one is keeping the peace and having the world pass by around you, depending on, you know, because I'm also thinking about like Buddhist monks.
Yeah.
You eat little and you meditate and you try to get to a higher, like an elevated state of mind and an elevated state of being. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's also a like it's a very American thing too, to be like, yeah, I could definitely see the church becoming a.
Which is interesting because it's not an American show.
I know. That's what I'm getting at. Is it's a like for us.
It feels way more. It feels way more possible for us than you would expect it to feel in other countries. Mm-hmm. Getting back to Matt and Karen, just for one last little moment here. The director, because he knew this was their first interaction, they weren't going to have, you know, the three episodes of bonding that they would have had they filmed them in order. The director really wanted to make sure that they had their like bonding time. And so he sent them on a boat excursion.
Oh,
they went on like it's been described as a frenetic boat excursion. So I'm assuming it was probably some kind of like almost like a jet stream boat because it was just in Cardiff Bay. It wasn't like they were going like water rapid riding or something. But that was how he was like, you guys are going to bond in a boat. And I do think that for whatever it's worth, I think it worked. They do have very good chemistry together.
I would have thought it'd be like, we're going to have you bond. We're going to send you to an escape room.
I mean, it was 2009 when they were doing this. So I don't know how big a thing escape rooms were in 2009. Yeah, I don't know. Let's not take too much longer to get to the next episode.
We've been dallying quite a long time.
Been piddling around here. So let me get to the Casper Fassi for Flesh and Stone. This last episode, I don't know if you noticed, was the first episode where the crack in time has not shown up.
Yet.
That's because the crack in time shows up in the next episode. What do you think happens when somebody touches the crack in time?
The crack in time's mom comes out of the kitchen so angry.
Don't touch my son's crack.
Yeah. Crack in time's mom whacks you with a chancla. What do you want? Time slipper.
Yes, there are a couple of people that walk up to the crack in time and touch it. What do you think?
You know what happens when people come up and touch my crack in time? I hit him with the time slipper. Because we saw the crack in time. We saw the crack in time.
It was first in Amy's bedroom.
I know. But that is what I thought was what the giant eyeball alien was using to like peer into and to make the announcement that Prisoner X has escaped.
Prisoner Zero. Yes.
Sure.
Yeah. The part of the crack was that it became like this passageway in her bedroom.
Yeah. So if going based off of that, it has to be some kind of passageway.
Okay.
So either if you touch the crack,
you break your mother's back.
Yeah. Thanks. Either when you touch the crack, you get teleported to a different spot in space and time.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you touch the crack, you are eliminated from space and time. It's one of those two.
Okay.
That is my belief.
Okay. You want to pick which one?
Those are both good answers for me. What's the most Moffatian? What's the most Moffatian? You said three people?
I said a few people.
Okay, because
I think it's three, but I don't.
Can I ask who?
They're not important characters.
Okay. Oh, they're not important characters? They get erased from time and space.
All right, so the prediction for Cassie is that they get, when you touch the crack in time, you get erased from time and space. And additionally, in this episode, they go into the Byzantium and they find the oxygen factory that provides air for the ship. However, it does not look like a machine.
It is a hamster on a giant wheel.
I gotta do it. They can't breathe if I don't do it.
Yeah, it's a hamster running really fast near a snake plant, like a lot, like a big snake plant. So the hamster is like freaked out because he's like, oh, no, a snake plant. But then the snake plant's like, yes, so much oxygen. Well done. Well done, me. Good guess.
What do you think the oxygen factory looks like?
So it's not a hamster and a snake plant.
It's not a hamster and a snake plant.
Well, looks like the Harry Potter potions maker, the Polyjuice potion creator.
It's like a cauldron and
a clear plastic cauldron, so you can see your like yellow and green ooze. Tasted like peach.
Instead of a machine, it looks like magic is what you're getting at.
I don't know. Just kind of fucking around right now. I'm vaguely confused by the answer. Does it look like something like a machine, or are you just looking like for?
If I were to tell you, this is an oxygen factory. What sort of imagery comes to your mind?
A lot of plants.
A lot of plants.
Sure.
All right. So you think the oxygen factory looks like a lot of plants?
You're not giving me much to work with right now, my dude.
I was just kind of trying to see what I mean. To be fair, I got what I wanted, which was just to see like what random gobbledygook would come out of your brain. And hamster and a snake plant certainly qualifies for that.
Yeah. What qualifies as an oxygen factory? I don't know. The same thing that qualifies as a an everlasting gobstopper factory. It's either, you know, bits and boops or just a piece of plywood with some fabric thrown over it.
Well,
there's a lot of answers to this, my guy. What do you want?
I just wanted to see where your brain
plants.
Would go.
It's plants. Moving on.
Alrighty. So with that, we will find out if people disappear when they touch the crack in time and if an oxygen factory looks like a bunch of plants.
If it's a greenhouse, that's technically an oxygen factory. Did you know that plants make oxygen?
As we watch Flesh and Stone.
I hate this.
And we are back from Flesh and Stone.
Beep, beep, boop, beep, boop, 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 boop.
That was Cassie's impersonation of a tree.
Beep, 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 boop, 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 boop. Science trees.
Treeborgs. Yes, you were correct on both privacy points for the second episode. So you cracked a full 50-50 for this two-parter here.
Hooray.
Let's maybe get down just the broadest stroke here. I feel like I ask this every episode, but what'd you think, Cassie?
The angels were laughing.
You did wonder.
That's Angel laughing.
You did wonder what that would, what Angel laughing would sound like in the last part. I had done a little laugh and you would went, what do you think the angels sound like doing that? And then you got your answer. You know what? I think I have to give you a Profassi point for that.
Yeah.
Just because that's so specific.
Yeah. Thanks. So. Point well earned.
What did you think about the story? How did you feel about this two-parter? Our first return to the angels.
Oh boy. I liked the beginning, or I liked the first part.
Okay. The first episode, or do you mean like the build up into the tomb, or do you mean like the full first episode?
I liked the first full episode because I did enjoy how do you find a weeping angel in a catacomb.
Mm-hmm.
Like that already is like a very cool world building. There were six layers in the catacomb because each ascent is like one step closer to heaven.
Yeah. We also talked about, I think we talked about in the first Blink episode about the terracotta soldiers, being a fun place to put weeping angels. And they didn't do exactly that, but they sort of did that.
It's the same idea. It is an ancient structure that was designed for a purpose that then is corrupted by the weeping angels. Mm-hmm. And I really, really, really like that.
Yeah. And I like the way they managed to like lean into the way you discover all of those. Are weeping angels too, is that the doctor just starts telling stories about knowing an Aplan and having his two heads and how, you know, when you have two heads, you're never short of a snog. Always got someone to smooch. But then apparently there are laws against self-marriage, and it's just like getting you thinking about like there's someone out there that has two heads for them to eventually be like, oh, all the Aplans had two heads. Why don't their statues have two heads?
How did the Aplans die out? Nobody knows. Oh, fuck. Because that's basically how it went. And so I like that. I like that really slow burn. Because you're like, oh, we're just being delighted by the doctor's whimsy, talking of tall tales and telling stories, and something here isn't right. Something here is actually extremely very, very wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you do cut over to, you know, a hole in one of the walls where there are angels that are caught mid-crawl,
mm-hmm.
because typically you don't see them crawling, they're just kind of moving towards you, their arms move,
mm-hmm.
and they're like heads and faces, but you don't see them on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just an image that will stay with me, is this like scary stone crawling evil nasty.
Yeah, like the specifically the ones that look like their faces are like half melted.
Yeah,
just really like unsettling.
In that particular context, that makes perfect sense because mm-hmm. erosion happens.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is an extremely old structure, then yep. by all means, because you can hear the water. There's everything around you that's like, all right, yeah. Science mind tells me that this would be a natural occurrence.
Yeah, whatever part of them is statue. You know, it also makes sense if you view them as like a living creature, just like if you don't eat for a long time, we see the way that that affects human bodies. So there's a way that you can accept that it accepts that it affects angel bodies, too.
Yeah. Even though it's like, yeah, that also makes perfect sense then that the thing that would kill them would be time.
Mm-hmm.
Time, no energy. And just the time progressing as they're getting like sicker and sicker, basically.
Yeah.
And how erosion and stuff over time would make stone disintegrate.
Mm-hmm.
Like think about sand.
Yeah.
Like that was rocks. That was coral and fish poop.
Yeah. And they do a pretty good job of like making the angels seem smarter in this story than the last one. Like the last one, they definitely seemed like clever, but this one, like an angel had a plan. Like the reason the ship crashed where it crashed was because the angel planned it so that the ship would land in that tomb and the radiation spilling off of that crash could revive its brethren. And that's like, that's a really complex, like, specific plan. I mean, there's a little bit of like, how would you know that it would land exactly where it landed? But also, like, you know, that is part of the story. But it's like, that's a clever thought out plan that isn't just, I'm a creature lurching towards you to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a little disappointed in the sense that I liked, there was a sense off of the Weeping Angel in the first that they were just animals that were hungry. And this is how they ate. And how they ate wasn't like malicious. It was just the way things worked.
There was an ambivalence in the first time you meet the Weeping Angels.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, they're not really good or bad. How they eat is a little destructive in the sense that then they're removing your place in time and sending you to somewhere way, way back where you can't come back to where you were before.
Yeah. It's one of those where it's just like
that just kind of, that is sucks and is life altering, but it was painless.
Yeah, it
felt like a major inconvenience than angels snapping necks.
Yeah, it felt like if you want to compare it to, you know, you have scavengers that eat corpses, like to us, that's disgusting and not great. But to them, that's nature. And so there was a part of it where like this just feels like what the angels were doing was just their natural process. Just to us, it's horrifying. But now it's, no, the angels are like evil and malicious and will taunt you and break your neck and use your brain to like taunt you. And there's a part of it's like that's
use your consciousness to taunt you.
Yeah.
Not brain.
Yeah.
It was just Sacred Bob's consciousness that they were using.
Yeah. So it's one of those where it's like, I don't know which I prefer, because there's definitely like there's fun to a giddy villain, to a villain that is like, yes, we're what was it they had said that got, oh yeah, they were making Amy count down from 10 for fun.
Yeah,
like there's a part of it like that's fucking evil, that's evil and it sucks and oh my god. I had joked about them playing with their food, it was very much that.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely something really engaging about something that is gleefully evil. On the other hand, though, there is also something really interesting that you don't get a lot of, this like this thing is so big or and so like fundamental to the universe that we just can't argue with it. Like it's not a morality thing. It's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a part where it's like, I don't know if to keep the angels coming back, maybe they did need that kind of evolution. But on the other hand, it is kind of disappointing that they're not just
it takes them from being more, like, more predatorial to, like, sophisticated.
Yeah.
In their methods. And something about that sophistication makes them feel more human, but then also, like,
more knowable in that sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess it's just interesting. I don't know if it's good or bad. It's just, but it is an interesting change.
Another thing that was brought up was the fall, the opening, the breaking of the Pandorica.
Mm-hmm. Yes, when the Pandorica opens is something that
when the Pandorica opens, then the Doctor says, "Well, that's a fairy tale," and then River Song says, "Aren't we all?" And it made me think even more. Like, this episode was very fairy tale.
Yeah, Stephen Moffat really leans kind of on the fairy tale aspect.
Especially, they did make Forest Science Forest with the beboops. But the fact that they're in this like dark, misty, enchanted forest, basically. Mm-hmm. Enchanted in the way that like there is this scary rift,
mm-hmm.
this crack that is emanating this light that is frightening away the, for lack of a better term, the Dementors.
Mm-hmm. That's what's on the other side of the crack. It's just Harry Potter casting Expecto Patronum.
Yeah. That's just God's Patronus is a crack in time and space. But there was a quality about this taking place in a forest like this that, it's not just a forest. Mm-hmm. It's a forest that's inside of a ship. Or as they called it, the oxygen factory. Made me angry that I was so correct.
You're unhappy if you're wrong. You're unhappy if you're right. There's no winning with the Cassie Professi.
But there's also like a fair deal of irony in this. The thing that ends up saving Amy is her closing her eyes when everything that we know of the angels up until this point is whatever you do, do not blink.
Yeah. Now she's being told you can exclusively blink. Whatever you do, don't open your eyes.
Yeah. And, you know, the like there is now a challenge set afoot. Walk like you can see.
Yeah. How does that affect you as someone who is it nearsighted or are you farsighted? I can't remember.
Yes.
Okay. Someone who is vision impaired.
Thank you. It affects me quite a bit. I really like being able to see when I don't have my glasses on. Because that's the thing. With my particular vision, with my glasses off, I can still see just fine. I compare it to the difference between watching VHS versus Blu-ray.
Okay.
Sometimes it's nice to just kind of be able to zone out on like a piece of string. And other times I really need to see that string because I happen to be sewing at the moment. String is very important for that.
Yeah.
So there is a part of me that's like, jeez, that sucks. Like walking like you can see.
Mm-hmm.
No. And you're in a forest with like rifts and dips and things that are easily to trip over. And she does trip.
Yeah, she does.
And the angels realize, oh, shit, this girl can't see. And then we see them moving.
Mm-hmm.
Are you stupid right now?
Well, yeah. How'd you think about it? Did you like the like sound of stone as they like move?
Well, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. The like. Because we've never seen stone be flexible before. So it's very interesting how they made that sound work.
Yeah. There is a part of me that was like, oh, shit, they've evolved. We can see them moving now. When before we had pontificated, is the reason why the angels don't move on camera is because we are seeing them.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a like meta context there that I really enjoyed that it was like, oh, shit, you will never see an angel move on camera because we inherently are eyes looking at the angel.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a little part of me that was like, man, it takes me out of it because now I'm not part of it.
Yeah. I don't think they do that very much. Like the angels come back a couple other times. I can't think of another time where they do that. And I think because of that reason is that it feels better if our eyes are also part of who keeps them from moving.
But this episode also discredits the like, well, the camera is eyes. Yeah. Because if an image of an angel becomes an angel, then we're fucked.
So many angels on our TV right now.
My God, they've been burned into my memory.
We just like pop up Tears of the Kingdom and suddenly there's weeping angels marching their way towards Link.
If I play a video game and a damn weeping angel is in that video game, we're burning the game.
It's funny, there are a few horror games that have characters like that.
I don't play horror games for that reason, Zach.
Like, Resident Evil 8, I believe, has marionettes that do that. Not marionettes. What's the...
animatronics?
Not animatronics, like the things that they use to display clothes.
Mannequins?
Mannequins, yeah, they have mannequins doing it. Yes.
My favorite!
Yeah, mannequins marching towards you. I know that... in the game Poppy's Playtime, they have a character who's a robot teacher that only moves when you don't look at her, and you can hear her moving towards you.
I hate horror games. Like just putting it right out there, I hate them. Cannot stand stuff.
So, going back to the story a little bit, I don't want to do like a whole plot breakdown. I know sometimes we do that, but I don't feel like this necessarily needs it. I do like that they found a way to like separate the two episodes by location.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first one is mostly in this cave, these catacombs, and the second one is mostly in this forest.
Mm-hmm.
And so they feel very different. They feel like two different stories, but while still being stitched together by each episode bookends with ship.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first episode starts with River Song on board the Byzantium.
The first episode starts with a bunch of pee foul sounds. So I was like, will this be important later? The answer, no.
Well, it was that the idea was that the reason you were hearing those is because the guard had been smooched by River Song and her hallucinogenic lipstick. So he thought he was somewhere else.
With peacocks.
Yeah. And then the second episode starts with them having jumped from the cave onto the ship. And so they're on the ship again. And at the end of the second episode, the story effectively ends with them teleporting Amy onto the ship again. So there's these like two sections of like natural environment where the angels are. And I do sort of like this vibe that because the angels are made of stone, the second you get into some place that is metal, you're safe from the angels. Like, I don't know. That's not necessarily like a truism, but it was true for this story. That as soon as you got onto the ship, you were safe. But as soon as you left, you were unsafe again.
Yes. Counter argument, though. Those bitches were opening the doors on the ship.
Like I say, it's not 100% true. It was more just an aesthetic vibe that they went with.
They were unnaturally strong.
Able to move a magnetized door that nothing could move. Chunk. Chunk. What did
you
think?
I do like that the episode began with the doctor in a museum.
Yeah, the doctor just like apparently that's where he goes to like be like, keep I've been there, I did that, that's one of mine.
Finding a home box. It's like a black box on a plane, but it homes. I do like that his explanation of that is truly like, well, it's an ancient language. It can raise empires and kill gods. What does it say? Hello, sweetie.
Yeah, because if you remember, that was the first thing she said to the doctor in Silence in the Library. So I do like that. I like that she learned this like ancient language that only I think three people in existence still can speak. And she uses it to taunt the doctor to come help her.
Like, she's cheeky.
And she's got a very like dramatic flair, obviously, by the fact that she's when she chooses to do this, she's wearing like a long, flowy black dress, like 4-inch scarlet heels and sunglasses.
The only thing that I really would have liked even more, the scarlet shoes is a very good choice and it's cheap. I really wanted to see her, though, in some red bottoms.
What are
like
red
Louis
bottoms?
Vuittons.
Oh,
like
okay.
Shiny, like black patent leather shoes with like, because that's like the thing with that particular designer shoe is that they have the red,
mm-hmm.
like lacquered. It would have been such like a bad bitch moment.
It's a good thing to get a good contrast of how else she looks, though, because for most of this episode, she's wearing that like military uniform. And in most of Silence in the Library, she's wearing the astronaut suit. So we didn't really get to see her dressed the way she likes to dress yet. So getting just a little example of like, oh, she likes to dress in shoes that can kill a man.
She likes to dress like a bad bitch.
Yeah, Moffat definitely has a type.
Which is bad bitches.
Yeah.
I do like that there was a moment where like, it's when Amy and River first meet. Amy does have the like, I'm in love.
Yes.
Look in her eyes, which is, it's so relatable. Yeah. It's the like, I don't want to do anything with you, but right now in this moment, I'm yours. Whatever you need.
Yeah. Just Amy's just like, I love her. She puts you in her place. Like at one point she says that River looks at the doctor with like talks to him with this tone of like, heal boy, which there's a certain truth to that. There is a certain level of like, River is one of the few people in the universe that knows things the doctor doesn't. And she really milks that for all it's worth.
Yeah, because she even says they keep meeting in the wrong order.
Yeah, I like that one point she says like, yeah, I was taught to fly the TARDIS by the very best. And the doctor like smirks a little bit and he goes, shame you were busy that day. Which raises the question, who the fuck else knows how to fly a TARDIS?
It's also the fact that he is like, he is the one responsible for the TARDIS. And when she's like, why aren't you pressing this button? Well, it's just a blue button. It doesn't do anything. Like, yes, it does.
They're the blue stabilizers. And then he's like, no, they're the blue boringers. And because it does make sense that, like, if these people would invent machines that travel through space and time, why the fuck do they rattle around so much?
Well, because he had the brakes on the entire time.
Because the stabilizers are what kept the TARDIS from shaking during travel.
Well, yeah, and then he's also, she also says that the brakes were on. He's like, but I like that sound.
You haven't landed?
Of course we've landed. I just landed her.
But it didn't make a noise.
What noise?
You know, the...
It's not supposed to make that noise. You leave the brakes on.
Because it's really funny to, like, take this, like, decades of context, like, decades of knowledge and recontextualize them to be like, yeah, they're that way, but they're that way for the Doctor. That's not how they normally work. Which they can get away with because we don't really see any other TARDISes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even when we went back to the classic series, the way we saw that other Time Lord appear was just him popping into existence, floating in midair. Yeah. So it's one of those where, like, yeah, you kind of can just correct that or, like, make, or at least make a joke about it without it being a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And then he leaves the brakes on. That's why the TARDIS smells so funny.
That's why it sounds the way that it does.
I do also like that there's a few different people questioning whether the Doctor and River are married.
Mm-hmm.
And the Doctor answers, but then, like, sidesteps it. And she's like, is she your wife? She talks to you like she's your wife. He goes, yes, you're right. I am grumpy today. And then later she asks River the same question. And River's like, do you really think it would be something that simple? She goes, yes.
He's the Doctor.
Yeah. And she goes, yes, I do think it would be that simple. And she's like, you're good. I'm not saying you're right, but you're good. So they're still not really telling you what the Doctor and River's whole deal is.
Mm-hmm.
They do sort of allude to her being the Doctor's wife, but they don't really want to spell that out just yet.
Because the Doctor and River's story is one that I have really glommed onto just because I think it's neat to have these two time travelers who keep crossing paths and they have relationship and they have rapport, but in terms of their own, like, personal timelines, they're not, they meet at the same time, but not in their, like, life cycle.
Yeah.
Like how we meet River Song the day that she dies, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just, it's just such a fun, like, interesting take.
Yeah.
Like, if it was a book.
Yeah.
If it was a book, I would eat that shit up. And it bums me out that it's like, man, I can't just have, like, a supercut of all of the Doctor and River Song's. I'm sure that there is somewhere.
Oh, there's a short that we'll watch when we get there. That when River can always come back. Obviously, she's a time traveler. But there's a part in it where when Moffat leaves the show, one of the things he ties up is sort of the loose end of River. And then there's a short that we're going to watch that puts the story together in River's order.
Mm-hmm.
And so we could see how her story went for her.
Fantastic.
So we'll get to that eventually, but that's a few seasons away. But yeah, there is that. There is this era. There is a way we can go back and watch.
Cause, like,
a supercut.
Full disclosure, was 100% very interested in looking up fan fiction of it. But I was also like, I don't want it to give away possible spoilers. And also, I just didn't want it to give away anything else that they want to do. No holds barred. Give me everything you got. Give me the nasty stuff. But no spoilers.
Yeah, not yet. You got to wait at least until we finish Matt Smith, because then you at least know that you're probably safe looking up anything with River and the 11th Doctor. So I do like that there was sort of a callback to Silence in the Library, where at one point she goes, sweetie, I need you. And the Doctor takes a moment to go, sweetie is me. he doesn't say it out loud, but he does mouth it. He has like realize it. And it's the same vibe as I'm pretty boy.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty?
Because the only other thing I really did get hung up on that I enjoyed is what, or something that we've only seen a handful of times, but I do enjoy it every time, is the, like, companion camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the first time that a companion looked at River, who's effectively another companion, and did have that moment of like, oh, fuck.
I mean, we sort of got that with Rose and Jack.
Fuck, this place is, this person's so cool. I want to be just like, oh.
It was before Jack became a companion, but there was definitely a sort of like, Rose would totally be down to clown with Jack Harkness. Speaking of down to clown, end of the episode, Amy, like, can we go back to my place for a little bit?
I need to show you something.
And shows him the wedding dress.
Oh, wait, before we get to that, they do mention that River killed a man and he was, quote, the best man.
Mm-hmm.
She often says that the doctor is the best person that she's ever known. Does she kill the doctor?
I guess we'll have to find out.
That means yes.
It also just means I don't want to spoil whatever's happening for you.
That means yes.
That definitely seems to be what they're implying, doesn't it?
Uh-huh, it does, actually. Unless it's the other version of the 10th Doctor that exists in Rose World.
I mean, that could be interesting.
That's not what happens based off of your response, but sure.
I mean, I'm trying not to give anything away.
Okay, but I'm right.
So speaking of jumping someone's bones.
Oh my God, she kills Jack.
Amy at the very end just wants, I mean, we've already seen Jack die. We saw Jack die in
Yeah, but he can die a lot.
He could die a lot.
Yeah. You can kill him without him being dead. That's how lizard logic works.
He's a big difference between mostly dead and all dead.
Yeah.
Speaking of jumping someone's bones, Amy, at the end of this episode, is like, can we go back to my place? I want to show you something. Which at first seems to be the wedding dress. At the end seems to be maybe the between of her thighs.
Ew.
Because the whole.
I understand what you mean, but why you have to frame? I'd love to see the between your thighs. Zach, when we're done with this recording, I'm going to take you in the back and I want to see the between your thighs.
I might redo that if that feels too goofy. It was like, you know, it seems like what she wants to show him is the wedding dress, but then it seems to be what she wants to show him is a good time.
Hey, that's much better. Not the between the thighs.
Yeah, she's like,
hey, I want to show you a good time over here. I'm so sorry. He doesn't pay rent.
Yeah, she's immediately like, yeah, I'm getting married to Rory. If you remember Rory, Nurse Rory.
The hot one or the other one?
Yeah. The way he gestures to it is with a nose, like Rory's nose. And then she's like, yeah, I'm getting married to Rory, which good for him, but also like bad for him. She ran off.
Yeah, good for him, but also she clearly is not, because she doesn't even want to call him her boyfriend in the first episode.
Yeah. So it makes you wonder why she said yes in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she sits down with him on the bed. And she's like, I've been thinking about what I want, about who I want.
And the doctor just goes, uh-huh.
Just total wago whoosh right over his head. Because
until she really starts pursuing him and like really skittering up and down his body. It was reminding me of the squirrels in Sword in the Stone.
Yeah, because she's like, in one very simple word, even you can understand, and the word is mwah. Yeah, she like aggressively kisses him, and to which she's like, to which the doctor's like, no, I'm like 917. This is not going to work.
I am a man.
And she's like, yeah, she's like got him pushed up against the TARDIS. And he's like, no, this would never work. And her response is, oh, I wasn't thinking anything long term. What?
I mean, get it, girl.
Amy, this is a family show.
Amy, get it, girl.
There is one point where he starts realizing like something is up with today, because that the crack in time leads back to her wedding day.
I wonder what would happen after today.
But there's a part of him that's like, oh, this is like super important to you. it's all about you. And she's like, okay, he's getting into it now. But he's not at all.
Yeah, it's all about you. He has like beautiful mind, math equations, just.
And she's like, hold that thought, and like hops onto her bed thinking that he's on board now. That my favorite like back and forth of this whole bit was like, what's most important right now is that I get you sorted out. And she's like, that's what I've been saying.
Can I be completely honest with you, dude? Mm-hmm. That's so relatable. It is so relatable to be like, oh, excellent. We're off to the races. Nope. You're writing something down now. Okay.
But yeah, I just like
that. Should I wait here?
Can I? I mean, I'm like set. Do you need a minute?
I can get ready for you. Should I get ready? Let's try this again. And then he pushes her into the TARDIS.
I just really like that. I've got to get you sorted. That's what I've been trying to tell you.
I just really love a scramble man. And that's what Matt Smith is a little bit of a scramble man.
I'm a bit of a scrambly man, too, I think.
No, not in the same way. You're not like.
Not that manic, no.
That and like he is just skeleton with flesh. Oh,
OK.
Like physically speaking, like he is. A Tim Burton character.
Yeah, I do. There's a moment where she's like taking his suspenders off and then he's immediately putting them back on.
Yes. No offense, love. You have the body of like a prospector, which is fine.
Yeah, that's why I don't wear suspenders, because then I would look much more like a prospector.
You would look like you would look like the mayor of a Western town.
Well, fine day for mayoring, isn't it? Yeah. Welcome to my fine town.
What would your town be called?
Prospectorsville. I guess Whosville, if we're doing the show. All the Who down in Whoville.
Anyways. And
you'd be the Grinch.
I would resent that.
But not deny it.
Bean! Get my cloak. God, just the narrative now where I'm the Grinch and Bailey and Monty are both my maxes. My only like head scratcher for this is the angel that was on the security camera footage. Mm-hmm. Was it just because everybody was watching the video that she couldn't move?
Because
that was the only thing that I'm really like, but she.
I would say that it's not couldn't move. I would think that it was, you know, we've established in this story that they are smarter creatures. Yeah. So there's a very real chance that that angel was waiting for someone to be alone so that it would be an easier, you know, you're looking for easier prey.
Mm.
Like if you think about it in an animalistic sense, they're looking for this gazelle to get away from its herd.
They're looking for Bambi.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of times for like wild animals, they'll go after the like unprotected babies.
Yeah. So that's
because they're slower moving targets. And in this case, like Amy quite is an literally
baby.
Yeah. Well, because Amy is inexperienced.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that the Weeping Angels would know that right off the bat, that everybody else here is somebody, something that knows what they are and that she doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Any companion is an easy target.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if the angels do have a hive mind of mm-hmm. sorts and they at least recognize the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it is just a like that could very easy or that could be why this time around the angels are taunting the doctor a little bit more because they're like, ah, yes, we've met before.
I think it's also knowing that they're not going to be. It's not that they can all go out and feast. There's dozens of Weeping Angels. There's only about 20 or so soldiers and the doctor, Amy,
River.
Yeah. There's no way for all of them to feed. So I think there's a part of them that is like, we're just going to feed off this radiation. And in the process, we need the doctor alive to like throw into the hole. And so we have to keep him from thinking his way out of this.
We have a deal for you, doctor. Throw yourself into the hole. Save your friends. All right, wise guy.
Yeah. How about instead I just turn this whole ship to the side like a garbage can and I shake you all into the hole instead?
cheese.
I do like there just as a little emotional beat. I do like that when River manages to teleport Amy away from the angels, he goes, "Oh, River, I could kiss you." And she goes, "Maybe when you're older." That's a cute line.
And I do like we saw it twice, or we saw the first time the doctor telling Rivers to give Amy a hug because he's busy.
Yeah. Give Amy a hug because I'm busy.
And then when River does manage to teleport Amy, she teleports her into an immediate embrace.
Yeah, it's very sweet. Another fun thing they do in those rooms is when the angels first get into the ship. Not first into the ship, but after they're in the behind those doors that they slowly open, when the angels break into there, they manage to grab the doctor by the coat.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only way he can get out is by taking the coat off, and he doesn't wear it for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, that coat's gone.
He's got to pull another one out of the wardrobe now.
He's got to go back to the hospital and take somebody else's.
Got to go back to the hospital, find that guy, get the coat he bought to replace the coat he stole.
Yeah.
And just fuck with him.
Easy. I was thinking and going back, going back in time just a little bit and remembering how you were saying that this is the first episode that they shot together. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine the first episode, the first time that you are on camera with somebody, you're seducing them?
You know?
Because it's not like that never happened in Hollywood. That happens a fucking lot. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's true or not, but I do know there were rumors that while this scene was filming, Matt Smith and Karen Gillan were dating. So I do wonder if they took that to heart. I mean, Karen Gillan is now, you know, married to someone else entirely. But there was a rumor that was happening at the time. Either way, they seem very friendly. So whatever happened, it was good.
I was just amused.
Yeah.
It's like, this is fun. Like I said, it reminded me so much of the squirrels in Sword in the Stone.
Yeah, there's something about where I'm glad they don't go through with it because there is a bit of like, that's not entirely consensual. But there's something fun about.
I'm 907.
Yeah. Well, there's something funny about the power dynamic flipping so heavily.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, the doctor is pretty much constantly in charge until suddenly Amy's like, I'm the boss now.
Yeah. Amy saw River Song like she'd seen the Barbie movie for the first time. She was so hopped up on a woman power juice.
She's like, she's right. I can't be a girl boss.
I can do that. Come here, boy.
I do like the idea that she met who she believes is the doctor's wife. And she's like, I guess I gotta get in there fast or she'll get him first.
I
guess I
gotta tap that first. Huh.
Just seems disrespectful. Just seems disrespectful if I do it after they're married. But for now, neither of us are.
I'm going to cheat on my fiance.
My goofy looking nurse fiance with the nose.
He's not goofy looking. He's unique.
Before we forget, one of the most important season plot bits, the Kraken Time shows up. And
Kraken Time?
The soldiers that were sent to protect Amy each walk into the Kraken Time and seem to disappear from time altogether.
Yeah, I was correct.
Yeah, I had remembered it being three times, but it was four soldiers that actually went in.
Yeah, because it was two and then one and then one.
Yes, exactly. But each time the one that's left behind doesn't remember the ones that just went in.
God, so scary.
And the doctor then explains that going into the crack in time means that you're erased from existence. You'll have never been born.
That's so scary.
That was next to her while she slept for a decade. More than that, 12 years. It's still in her room. The Kraken Time is there and watches Amy try to boink the doctor.
I'm sorry. You keep saying crack in time, but I said Kraken Time. And now I just can't.
Release the Kraken. It's Kraken Time.
Yeah, I'm just imagining like somebody coming out of our kitchen with a whole bottle of rum. Like, it's Kraken Time.
You just get like a just a bunch of Christmas crackers fall out of the hole, and they're like, "Oh, Kraken time!"
Yeah.
Just
One more. The crack just starts. White powder starts coming out. It's
Kraken. There's Kraken time.
It's crack cocaine. Okay.
There's actually three. There's the Kraken time. There's the Poppin' time and the Snappin' time. And if you put all three together, you'd get a bunch. You get a bunch Rice of Rice Krispies. Krispies
time.
Yeah. And so she establishes that he establishes that this Kraken time just consumes
Kraken time.
It's almost time for Kraken time.
I'm sorry. I'll stop.
Yeah. They establish that if you walk into it, you have never existed. So interesting what they're going to do with that. Can you imagine?
Well, especially since after all of the angels fall into the crack heals itself.
Yeah. Well, because they establish that they need something that's a complicated time event. And, you know, a weeping angel is just a quantum being. It exists in time and then it becomes a statue when it's looked at and it exists again. So there's complications to it, but nothing like the doctor that has gone all over the place for hundreds of years. River even offers herself as tribute because she's a time traveler too. But the doctor's like, not like me or not. Like, they need something big. They need, like, I'm the equivalent of all these angels. Speaking of which, let's pour all these angels into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's dump them into the Kraken time like they're chips going into a bowl.
And the bowl is my mouth. Ah.
And the ship is the bag of chips. It's a chip ship.
And the doctor is guacamole. This metaphor is getting away from me a little bit.
Are you hungry?
I think I am hungry. I think I would like some chips and dip.
Well, there'll be plenty of more chips and dips.
On the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Is that really how we're ending it?
I don't think so. Because I want to let you know the next episode is... I want to hear your reaction to this. The next episode is called The Vampires of Venice.
Woohoo! I'm so excited about it.
What a perfectly, like, Cassy title. Like, not just Italy, but Venice. And not just any creatures, but vampires.
Because, like, I didn't even realize until we had watched the last Pierrot movie, mm-hmm. the one that took place in Venice. Fucking love Venice, bro.
Yeah, we get Venice. So we had werewolves werewolves with David Tennant. And now we're having vampires with Matt Smith.
Oh, my God.
Do you want to make a prediction as to what other kind of universal monsters we get with future doctors?
Well, we already did kind of have fishmen.
I guess that is Creature from Black Lagoon.
Yeah.
There are a few different fishmen. I was thinking more like specifically the...
I would love to see an Invisible Man. Something of that caliber.
Okay.
Mummies. We haven't seen a mummy.
Mm-hmm. Should I tell you if you're right or not?
Yeah.
Okay, so I will tell you there is a mummy in a future episode, in an episode called Mummy on the Orient Express.
Whoa.
Right? Isn't that fun?
Whoa, we're pulling it all full circle with Hercule Poirot.
And then for the 13th Doctor, there's an episode where they meet Mary Shelley and introduce... it's not specifically Frankenstein, but it's Franken-ish. And, you know, next episode, we might even be ready for a Who Is My Doctor?
I know. I'm taking my notes.
Still percolating?
Yeah, I have something in mind now, but...
All right.
I need one more, like, confirmation.
All right. Well, let's find out if we get that, Who Is My Doctor, on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed?
Good night. Goodbye.
And with that, we wrap up another exciting episode where Cassie spent most of our watch time squealing in horror. I don't think there will be any squealing next week, though, when we head to Italy for The Vampires of Venice. I also want us to revisit another classic Doctor story in the near future, so why don't you head on over to Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, or Instagram at WhimDePod and let us know which Doctor we should show Cassie next. She still hasn't seen any of the first, second, fifth, sixth, or seventh Doctors in anything. So if you've got a particular adventure in mind, send it my way. Until then, though, we'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.